welcome to our episode of the SAS Space Power Discussions. My name is Dustin Good, Major, U.S. Air Force.
Yeah, and my name is Lukman McBride, Major, United States Marine Corps. I just want to put a caveat to begin. All opinions expressed here are our own and not necessarily representative of the U.S. Department of Defense, the U.S. Air Force, or any affiliated programs.
This episode is one of a series of discussions that we and our classmates are recording about space power and space strategy as part of our spring 2025 Space Power course at the School of Advanced Air and Space Studies. Today, we're tackling the meaning and value of spaceflight by William Sims Bainbridge, a book that explores how public perception has shaped spaceflight as a political, cultural, and strategic endeavor.
But there is a kicker for our podcast today. This conversation here directly ties into a lot of what we've discussed over the space power block of our SAS curriculum, in particular some of the other topics that we've discussed throughout the year, talking about the narratives that drive national policy. In this case, we're talking space policy and how space strategy isn't just about physics and budgets, but rather about shaping perceptions, public perceptions, and then shaping the domestic perception as well as the international perceptions.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, exactly. This episode is for anyone who wants to understand how spaceflight has been sold to the public, both as an inspiration and as a policy tool. So let's start with the big picture. What is spaceflight and why does its meaning matter? To answer this question, I'll start by providing an overarching answer that will be expanded on throughout this conversation. Spaceflight, according to Bainbridge, is a historically significant endeavor with uncertain prospects, requiring an understanding of its diverse meanings. It holds different values for different people, encompassing scientific, political, and ideological dimensions. Studying its meaning helps clarify motivations for exploration and provides insight into human aspirations. And since social science is largely being ignored on this topic, Bainbridge compiles various public perceptions aiming to foster a research community that examines spaceflight's role in shaping the future. And so that's kind of big picture. I'm going to move from that into the book itself and kind of talk through how he begins the book and go through his methodology of how he sets it up. So before we follow up with another, I guess, key fundamental question, let's start with the background methodology.
All right.
In this book, Bainbridge explores the historical and sociological significance of spaceflight. He emphasizes public opinion, political ideology, and artistic expression. It discusses the uncertainty surrounding future space exploration and introduces methodologies for analyzing public perceptions, particularly through opinion polls and surveys. Bainbridge then outlines his methodology with respect to public opinion. He uses public opinion data as a gateway to a deeper understanding of the meaning of spaceflight and explains how he uses random samples in the general population to derive interpretations of spaceflight's meaning and value. In addition to that, though, he also uses groups and subcultures polling to build more of a nuanced understanding of spaceflight, especially through a lens of people that might actually know more about space and try to build on his original general population. So in sum, he explains that this book is a history that charts and analyzes public opinion, political ideology, and artistic space exploration.
So space is not just a domain for the military in that sense. It's a domain where we have the government being involved, but also the public sphere and the commercial sector also being involved in shaping the space domain and what we understand about space. Is that what I understand what you're trying to say?
Absolutely. And I'll even take, a step further and say that I would kind of build inroads with what Clausewitz and his triangle was saying between like public opinion, government, and military. And specifically in this piece, that the public opinion helps like lay the foundation for what you would say the government is willing to do in space. So that kind of gets us out of the, background and methodology and leads us to our first fundamental question, which is, what is the meaning of spaceflight? Bainbridge argues that spaceflight is not just a technological or scientific enterprise. It's a social construct shaped by how people perceive it. From the beginning, spaceflight has been marked as either a heroic, transcendent endeavor, think like Apollo, think Star Trek, the Final Frontier myth, or secondly, it's been a strategic necessity driven by military and economic interests. And in that sense, you can think of kind of Cold War competition, satellite infrastructure, and the whole theory of deterrence.
That leads us into essentially a dichotomy of views here. We see on the one hand there is this rhetoric about spaceflight being romanticized, both in films like Star Trek, and then this myth of the final frontier, almost as if it's the manifest destiny of the United States to conquer these uncharted territories. But then on the other hand, you have this counter-argument, or rather a counter-view, that space is really a domain for strategic competition, where there's military interest as well as economic interest. And we see evidence of that stemming back to the Cold War with competition, with the satellite infrastructures being launched, and then also space being a domain for deterrence.
Absolutely. I mean, I think really the baseline and foundation of what he's trying to say is that space exploration has always been contingent on how it's been framed politically and culturally.
Yeah, and so tying into the framing of space, and in this case we're talking space flight particularly, you know, it takes us back to some of the discussions we've had on the perceptions shaping military and national strategies. And so in the Cold War, for example, space wasn't just about rockets. It was, in fact, a symbol of ideological superiority. This how the United States demonstrated its power vis-a-vis the Soviet Union at the time, where it used spaceflight to convince the world of their scientific and moral supremacy. And again, another aspect of that is we see it today as well, where space policy reflects national identity. Look at the return of the astronauts most recently this week. That's also another reflection of the U.S. National identity, essentially. And there is some significance of that overseas as well, and some significance towards the rivals and adversaries. You see China's lunar ambitions as a geopolitical statement, essentially. So we could see how public perceptions do, in fact, shape military and national strategies.
Absolutely. In my opinion, Bainbridge breaks down the survey data showing that public support for space exploration fluctuates based off media framing, like you said, economic condition and global tensions. And I think he dives deeply, and then he goes out generally into a couple of specific events that happened. But we'll start with the first scenario is President Eisenhower and his Republican administration failing to anticipate and preempt public opinion after Sputnik went up, and the hysteria that caused.
All right.
And then he talks a little bit about that, but then he moves into President JFK's decision to go to the moon to revive the political spirit of his New Frontier program, like we talked about earlier. But he really did this after foreign policy failures or mishaps with the Bay of Pigs in Cuba, and then being humiliated on the national scale by the Soviet leader Khrushchev.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
Absolutely. And then finally, another piece, I guess, of context is the impact of the Vietnam War on the public perceptions regarding the prioritization of space programs. So those were more specific, I guess, events that he touched. But then when you generalize it, you look at that the specific events can be bucketed into like the Apollo era Americans supporting the moon because it was a Cold War victory. Or then you can look at it in like the 70s when spaceflight became too expensive in public opinion because the politicians framed it that way. And then finally today, space is being sold as through the commercial lens. So they got SpaceX, Blue Horizons. Their PR machines are reshaping spaceflight as more of an entrepreneurial endeavor that has people excited, frankly.
Yeah, and that ties us in today's book, right? With Ashley Vance's book, When the Heavens Went on Sale.
Yep.
Ashley Vance, I mean, there's several documentation of that on YouTube, and I think there was a documentary done on this book as well. Mm-hmm. It's really excellent because it shows how the private sector is taking over the space domain, and particularly spaceflight. And so in Ashley Vance's book, Vance argues that the rise of the private space companies like SpaceX, he talks about Rocket Lab, Astra, Planet Labs is shifting space exploration from state-led agencies like NASA to the private firms. And because the private firms are frankly faster, they're more risk-tolerant, and they're market-driven. So then they're able to innovate, adapt, and create these technologies, implement them much faster rate and at lower cost government programs. So we see how the private market essentially taking over the space industry.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that kind of brings us to where Bainbridge examines how institutions like NASA, big media and corporations manufacture enthusiasm or disinterest for space. But I guess a little more nuanced than that, he explores how leaders shape public opinion, and he breaks it down into two categories. opinion and organizational leaders.
All right.
He goes through and explains that opinion leaders are prominent in social movements, political factions, and established interest groups. So I kind of saw that more so as like maybe like a social, I guess, not social media. That to me, that's more, well, I guess social media kind of does tie into
it,
that.
It does.
And then he talked about organizational leaders and how they influence public opinion from the outside, being or seeking to become members of society or society's influential elite class. And even though it can be argued that maybe Elon is already part of that class, I kind of saw that as he's a SpaceX leader, and that's how the commercial realm is influencing space overall.
Yeah, precisely. Now I'll add that the media does play a big role on that. Media in the sense of film. We've seen a lot of films made on space, and we'll cover that a little bit on the later portion of this book. But film does play a big role on shaping public perceptions as well. We got, you know, Star Trek, Star Wars. These are all, you know, Mars, the new movie Dune.
Yep.
These are all movies about space that really influence public perceptions.
Absolutely. I mean, that goes back to Bainbridge arguing the space race, in that the general public was primarily just a passive observer, and that organizational leaders were dominant and opinion leaders functioned as mediators. And even more specifically than that, he talks about how significant historical moments such as like Challenger or the Strategic Defense Initiative and the future Mars missions from that time period, from back in the day, shaped public discourse on space exploration, and public support fluctuated in response to specific events rather than long-term strategic goals.
Yeah, so SDI actually didn't take hold. You know, it was an initiative, but it kind of withered away. Are we seeing the resurgence of an SDI now that's led by the commercial industry?
That's a good point, actually, because I think people would argue that the Golden Dome is SDI in the 21st century.
Yeah, precisely.
Which is funny because that ties back into another point of Bainbridge, that remarkable events have more power when powerful public opinion are low and leaves open the possibility that politicians or social movement leaders will determine the course of history. That kind of took us back to a couple classes ago when we talked about collective memory or institutional memory.
Yep.
And how you could see some of the organizational and opinion leaders of today trying to build that collective memory of getting to Mars or Golden Dome or what space does for us.
Crux of his book is that public perception is just not a reflection of reality, but it in fact creates the reality that we live in. And so whether space is seen as America's manifest destiny, as I previously said, or national security necessity, or even a waste of money, all depends on who is telling that story. And so let's talk about science, you know, the role of media, as you brought up earlier, simulations in video games, which Bainbridge talks about a lot, and then the frontier myth and how those have shaped public views towards our spaceflight.
Absolutely. So Bainbridge's second half of the book moves away from policy, politics, and like background information.
All right.
And he asks a different question, which is, what does spaceflight mean in our collective imagination?
Yeah, that's a great question because, you know, what does spaceflight mean? You know, are we exploring the world? Is it just to go venture into space, or is there some tangible value in space exploration? So the first debate is whether space exploration ought to be conducted by robots versus human spaceflight, which is really good paradox over here to conceptualize and then see space through. Well, back to Bainbridge. So Bainbridge's key argument in Chapter 6 is that scientific institutions have never fully embraced human spaceflight, which is very interesting. I didn't quite realize that before. You know, we're typically expect to see humans in space, not necessarily robots. But to think about the scientific role and robotic role of space exploration and spaceflight, so surveys have shown that scientists overwhelmingly support robotic missions, right? And I can get behind that argument because, I mean, take, for example, the Curiosity and Perseverance rovers that are currently on Mars, right? And so that really precludes humans it's a better solutions for exploring Mars than laboring to send humans to explore space and Mars in particular, because that would just take too much time. And then you also have to rotate the astronauts out, where in the case of the robots currently exploring Mars, they're autonomous and it saves on cost and investment as well. So the research signs, I mean, those robots are searching for signs of life, analyzing Martian soil without needing for astronauts to take extreme risk, for example. Similarly, the Hubble telescope, I mean, that's another fascinating use of robotic space exploration. So take the Hubble Space Telescope, for example. It has done more for astronomy and cosmology than the human space flights ever have. So Bainbridge, in that regard, really argues that robots are cheaper, safer, and scientifically more efficient, which, again, I could get behind that argument, but here's where it gets very interesting. Even though scientists prefer robots, the public actually is more emotionally invested in human space exploration. And so Bainbridge argues that it is because media and pop culture have long depicted space as a place for humans, not necessarily for machines.
Absolutely. And that spurred a quick thought that I had that potentially, when we talk about public opinion and spurring public opinion, like the fear might be that if you continue to put humans in space and something goes wrong, that the public opinion will drop versus if you put, and this could be the scientific argument. So, but I mean, overall, this ties into our discussion on public perception shaping policy. If scientific priorities alone dictated NASA's budget, we'd see far more funding for space telescopes, satellites, and robotic missions like you discussed. But because the public romanticizes space travel, NASA and other agencies are constantly pressured to justify human spaceflight, even when it's not the best scientific choice.
Yeah, and this directly connects to what we discussed in Bowen's Original Sin. You know, in his book, Bowen talks about how public sentiment and political rhetoric have driven funding, even when strategic or scientific priorities suggest, you know, otherwise. And so Space Odyssey, for example, and space flight mythologies are really driving factors as well. You talked about the emotional aspect of that. And films like Space Odyssey and then this myth about space exploration really does drive human curiosity in spaceflight. And so that can segue us into, you know, how films have influenced public imagination and space explorations. Bainbridge highlights particularly the 2001 Space Odyssey film as the most influential space film ever. So just a little background on that. The film really shaped how people imagine space travel. Space Odyssey is widely viewed, depicting space rather, from, you know, the sleek space with rotating space stations and, you know, zero gravity and so on and so forth. You know, it portrays space as a place of awe and also of eerie emptiness. And so you mentioned earlier, driven by the fear. And so there is a little fear component of it as well that appeals to human emotions in that sense. And so this also taps into the idea that space flight is about transcendence, really about human evolution into something beyond beyond Earth limitations. I mean, this is exactly what Elon Musk and SpaceX are committed to achieve, essentially, in the next 20 years, is to create a colony in Mars. Whether manifested or idealistic, still helps drive space exploration and then fuels human curiosity in space exploration.
Absolutely. And that kind of brings us back to Dolman's Astropolitik, where he's talking about the geopolitical high ground and something that must be controlled and militarized.
Oh, yeah, the key terrain.
Absolutely. And then that contrasts directly with people's imagined space as something being much grander, a place of like mystery, transformation, like ultimate destiny. So, like, the control aspect versus the, I guess, the fun exploring aspect.
Yep.
So, I mean, I guess the difference in perspective affects how people are funding space, where politicians sell it as a power play, whereas the public embraces it as like a spiritual frontier.
Yeah, and so politicians are not the only ones that are influencing space flight. You know, like Bainbridge says that interactive media, especially video games, have influenced space perception. So he specifically talks about the Kerbal Space Program, and that Kerbal Space Program really is a physics-based game of simulation. So players can design and launch spacecraft, for example. They also, you know, could deal with realistic spaceflight mechanics, orbital mechanics. They could learn about propulsion physics and space engineering. And so the really is a fascinating part of the book, because, you know, he knows how some aerospace engineers and NASA interns credit this simulation game, this Kerbal Space Program, with inspiring their careers. And so we could see how video games and simulations, digital simulation games, really help boost more interest into the spaceflight program. And so it is a good tool. And we see that driven largely through the commercial sector, not necessarily a military program.
Yeah, I think that's huge, because when you think about the public engagement isn't just passive nowadays. Like, you have all of this interaction. You have in the 60s, it was closer. It was shaped more by movies and TV shows where you're just passively gaining information. But today, with games and simulations, people actively participate in space exploration rather than just letting it happen to them.
Yeah. And so I mentioned 3 points earlier. So the final point really I want to talk about is the final frontier.
Yep.
And this really is the biggest myth in spaceflight, at least according to Bainbridge. So he argues that, you know, spaceflight and this final frontier has been framed as being the ultimate high ground for the U.S., but that, in fact, is a myth, according to Bainbridge, because unlike the Wild Wild West, space isn't naturally habitable. So you can't really just take a caravan and go seize terrain in space. And so there is certainly some challenges with trying to advocate for this final frontier myth in terms of like the U.S. space program. So Bainbridge argues that decolonization or space colonization isn't inevitable. And so really he diverges from SpaceX's current motivation and this vision of a Mars colony. He says instead that it's a political and economic choice, not a destiny in and of itself. So really, according to Bainbridge, we won't see a space exploration, which this is the point that I disagree with the book. And so if I had any criticism about the book, is this offers a bit of a pessimistic view on space exploration because it limits the imagination. And the premise of space, really, when you look at the media effect, commercial sector, really is driven by curiosity. I think the underpinning motive for space exploration is curiosity and human intuition to discover and explore space, which is vastly unknown still. So, that would be my only criticism to the book, is that it applies some limits on the imagination.
And this critique aligns with Bowen's argument about the cosmic coastline, where Bowen rejects that the high ground metaphor in favor of a more fluid naval analogy where spaces could contest a region, but not like a frontier to be conquered in that sense.
Yeah.
And Bainbridge, he warns against romanticizing about space colonization, arguing that it's more complicated than simply expanding civilization. One thing I do want, I appreciate that critique. I guess I'm going to change gears for a second.
Yep.
My biggest critique actually came from how Bainbridge did his analysis, not necessarily his analysis itself, because I thought that was like very statistically fluid but well done, and I appreciated the lengths that he took to prove his correlations and interpretations of the data. And I buy into his explanation that context and influencers help drive public opinion. But what I couldn't get past is I did not feel that Bainbridge closed the gap between correlation and causation.
Mm.
What I mean by that is that he demonstrated that there were shifts, and then he talked about narratives and media exposure and that type of stuff. But he did not necessarily, in my opinion, show that, hey, this shift happened. This happened, and then this shift happened.
Exactly.
It was more of like just spots in time that he didn't cherry pick, because those were events that happened and they seemed to be chronologically correct. But he didn't go through, I guess, the deeper proving that this caused that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's really a broad topic. So, you know, trying to conceptualize space flight and looking at public opinion, this is a daunting task.
Right.
Because, you know, we look at the value of space from the military sense, and we could articulate that. But for the public perception, it's really hard to trace a typology of how this public perception has changed and really what is driving public opinion on space and what do people think about space. Should we be investing in space? Should we be exploring space? And do humans need to establish a colony on Mars? And really, should the taxpayers fund it? That really lies into the biggest challenge. And so trying to answer that question is quite challenging. And I think he does a pretty decent job in the book of highlighting that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. I'd like to close out with Stacey Goddard's book, When Might Makes Right. And Goddard talks about multivocal legitimation strategies and legitimation languages. So in this sense, Goddard explains how rhetoric appeals to multiple audiences simultaneously. States, Goddard talked in context of Cold War, so he said rising states need to be able to articulate their strategies in a multivocal sense, where they appeal to both domestic audiences as well as international audiences. And clearly, the United States is no longer a rising power, but just as well, the concept still applies from Goddard. So developing a strategic narrative that appeals both to domestic audiences and to international audiences really is crucial for advancing U.S. spaceflight and then the U.S. space program in general. So we can even pull Joseph Nye's book onto this, where Nye talks about soft power. And Nye argues that the soft power shapes domestic unity and fosters a shared sense of national purpose. Meanwhile, that same soft power can be used to craft external narratives, project an attractive image of a national, of a nation, and influences other states and populations. So really, you could use both authors here really to advocate why the space flight is important and how the commercial sector actually could be leveraged to craft a strategy for the United States, a strategic narrative that appeals both domestically and convinces the public and garners more support for space programs, as well as convince the foreign audiences of U.S. prestige and power and the capacity to be able to explore space.
Absolutely. I really enjoy your takeaway because it kind of ties into mine, whereas you talk about the multivocal strategic narrative and how important that is to, I guess, energize both domestic and international partnership and support for the program. So my final takeaway actually was that Bainbridge forces us to reconsider why we care about space flight. It's not just about the rockets. It's about who controls the narrative along with the narrative itself. And are we exploring space for scientific reasons? Bainbridge scientist says no. Or are we buying into the mythical narrative about expansion and destiny, which Bainbridge also warns against? And in the end, public perception shapes the policy. If people believe in the final frontier myth, they'll support colonialization efforts, whether or not they're economically or scientifically viable.
Yeah, Dustin. And, you know, and that's the biggest lesson here, right? So our final takeaway for this podcast is that public perception isn't just an afterthought in space policy, right? It is the policy.
Right.
And strategic narratives is the vehicle that drives that policy. And with that, it shapes why understanding the meaning and value of spaceflight is so critical, both to national security and to our military strategy.
Yep.
And to our audience, I just want to say thank you for listening today.
Yep, we'll see you next time on our episode of SAS Space Power Discussions.
Cool.